This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's great to have a sidekick here joining us in studio. You know, it's a Tuesday, but really it's kind of more like a Monday after a three-day holiday weekend. And so got the phone lines open for you. Always enjoy taking your phone calls. But I know a lot of people are still in holiday mode. Earlier this morning, I felt like I was still in holiday mode. So I thought, hey, what the heck? Let's have John Jackson join us for our statewide show here on this Tuesday. So, John Jackson, great to see you. Thanks for being with us here this morning.
Always a good time, Aaron.
You know, lots to talk about, including the debt ceiling deal, which was the big news out of Washington over the weekend. The big news really, though, here in Montana, you know, over the past couple of weekends has been the state track tournaments. In fact, I was thinking about this. Did you hear about this story out of California where there were two transgender runners, two males, who ran in the women's track meet? And you know, I'm looking at a photograph of one of the Montana teams that took state, and you see all the young ladies standing on this podium. You know, the number one at the top of the podium, number two over here, number three, number four, number five. And you see all these young ladies, their faces just beaming, smiling, you know, that they made it on top of that podium, right? Whether they were in first, second, or third. In California, two young ladies were not able to assume those positions on that podium because two young boys took their spots instead. And then what did they have? They had I was trying to find the details on this. Then, so these two young men qualified for the next level of competition. But instead, because there was so much pushback in California, they didn't even show up for, I think it was the state track meet in California, because there was so much pushback, even in California.
That's amazing that they didn't show up. And you're exactly right. It's because of pushback. And like right here in Montana, because, you know, my daughter just finished competing in the state track meet and has now qualified for nationals. So we look at all the different, like I said, the qualifying standards for the state track meet for women and for girls and for boys. And you see the standards are far different because everyone knows boys and men are built differently than girls. The testosterone, size, strength, skeletal structure, everything is completely different. They just can't compete on the same level. It's just a fact.
Yeah, follow the science. But, you know, I was looking. It was so cool seeing the KATQ radio Facebook page. KATQ is our great radio affiliate in Plentywood, Montana, northeastern Montana. And, you know, there you go, back-to-back state track champs. They've got our buddy Rocky Erickson there with the young ladies from Plentywood. And then scrolling down the KATQ Facebook feed here, Audrey Sampson, high jump state champion, 5'4". You scroll down further, Emma Brensdole, I hope I pronounced her name right, state champion shot put, 40'7". And then Annie Call is Arlen Call, a retired Border Patrol agent's daughter. She was crushing it in multiple events. And I just think, you know what? It's so great that we get to celebrate these young ladies and they get a chance to be on that podium, whether they were the state champ or second or third place or fourth.
In glass, my daddy knows best. Call Rocky Mountain Glass at 406-259-3426.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we've got the phone lines open for you here on this Tuesday, Montana Talks, 406-294-0970. Or you can message us on our Montana Talks app as well. John Jackson with us here in studio. The Joker from Twitter. You can find him at Private Joker US. He's a retired federal law enforcement officer, has over 80,000 followers on Twitter. So always fun to mix it up with him and his fellow tweeps from Twitter that'll sometimes jump in on the conversation from elsewhere across the country as well. But, you know, John, we were talking about these transgender runners who ditched the race in California because they knew there was so much public pushback to these young men taking away these opportunities from these young ladies in California to get a chance to race in their preliminary finals, is I guess the official race that was underway. And it's pretty interesting because, you know, when we look at this controversy over the big box store Target, the retail chain Target, a lot of us have known that Target was very liberal politically for a number of years. I mean, back in 2014, they were pushing an anti-gun policy where they didn't want people, they didn't even want concealed permit holders bringing concealed weapons into their stores, right? And then in Montana, there was a Democrat gubernatorial candidate back in the 2000 election that ran against Judy Martz, who was a part of the family, the very wealthy family that owned Target. And so we've known that it's a very liberal family, very liberal politics. But boy, have they gone off the woke deep end using a satanic clothing designer to design their LGBTQ Pride Month clothing that they put in the kids section to target kids with this sexualized content. And it's generating a massive backlash all across the country. They lost $10 billion in shares in 10 days. $10 billion in 10 days. A lot of people already knew Target was liberal. So that shows that if California is pushing back on this and Target customers are pushing back on this, That shows you where the American people are at.
Well, look at, it's the same thing, same principle as Bud Light. Bud Light, who did they think drinks their beer? That they were going to put this tranny up as their spokesman. Like, just the same thing as Target. Who does Target think their shoppers are? Do they think Target shoppers are left-wing liberals? No, they are not. They are blue-collar, you know, middle
soccer
and lower-class people.
Yeah. Soccer moms or track moms who, you know, they're getting a little of this, getting some clothes at the same time. Now they're like, whoa, 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 stay away from the clothing section. In fact, stay away altogether is what the message is, apparently.
A little detail that comes out over the weekend, Aaron, about Target. Comes out that their vice president of brand management is also, now follow this, also the treasurer of an LGBTQ group that got $2.1 million from Target. Now, my question is, I wonder if the big bosses there at Target know that $2 million of their dollars got sent by their VP to a company where he's the treasurer.
Yeah.
That might be a little conflict there.
Yeah. Well, and that must be the group. I don't know if that's the group or if that's another group, but Fox News has a story out here that came out in just a few days ago as well. Target has been partnering with a K-12 organization that has been pushing for kids' genders to be secretly changed in schools without parental consent. So if you're in Missoula and some guidance counselor wants to tell your little girl that she's actually a little boy, they can do that and they can keep it quiet from you, mom and dad, the parents. And Target has been funding this organization, GLSEN, is the acronym for it. Speaking of Missoula and Target, I don't know if you saw this video on Twitter last week, but there was a video that was being shared, and it got some news. I think there was a Yahoo News story that I saw where this guy went into the Target in Missoula, and where they had the LGBTQ Pride T-shirt collection, the satanic clothing designer collection featured. This guy in, you know, blue jeans and a flannel shirt, plaid shirt, just basically in sign of protest, is taking some of the clothes and T-shirts and just throwing them on the ground. And it looks like he eventually got kicked out of the store. But anyway, he's protesting against, you know, what they're pushing and targeting kids with. And I saw there was a guy who the liberals in Missoula were claiming that he was being violent. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, you may not agree with his approach, you know, the turn over the tables approach of going in and protesting what they're doing, but you're calling that violent? And yet you guys defended the BLM riots throughout 2020 when they were burning down businesses and targeting law enforcement officers all across this country. And Kamala Harris was raising bail money for these guys, but a guy throws some T-shirts on the ground and you call it violence?
Oh, it's an absolute joke. They have enabled, encouraged with everything they do, from law enforcement to policy to everything. The, like you say, the looting and burning of stores and businesses across this country, and they want to speak up and say, that's just so wrong that a guy threw a couple of T-shirts onto the floor. Give me a break.
Yeah. Well, and what I thought also was pretty pathetic is there's a UM student, I believe he's a UM student named Paul Kim, I think is his name, and he made it racial. He made it a point that it was an angry white man.
Of course.
It was an angry white man who was throwing those T-shirts on the floor. Well, you know what? A black man was arrested in Missoula last week, too, but nobody needed to point out that he was black. So why did you need to make this a racial issue? Oh, because you think that because you're Asian, you're allowed to be racist against white people. Breaking news, bro. Racism is bad no matter who it comes from,
absolutely.
Including you. He was one.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordland.
Good Tuesday morning. Today we see that lab-grown meat, or meat which is cultured from animal cells, or petri dish meat, as some call it, is often thought to be more environmentally friendly than beef because it's predicted to need less land, water, and greenhouse gases than raising conventional cattle. But in a preprint, not yet peer-reviewed research report out from the University of California, Davis, they found that lab-grown or cultivated meat's environmental impact is likely to be orders of magnitude higher than retail beef based on current and near-term production methods. Researchers at UC Davis conducted a life cycle assessment of the energy needed and greenhouse gases emitted in all stages of production of the fake lab-grown meat and compared it with real natural beef. One of the current challenges with lab-grown meat is the use of highly refined or purified growth media, the ingredients needed to help animal cells multiply. Currently, this method is similar to the biotechnology used to make pharmaceuticals. This sets up a critical question for cultured meat production. Is it a pharmaceutical product or a
8500. That's 406-860-8500. You'll never go wrong when you're working with top quality builders.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right into the phone lines here. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and you get to be heard all across Montana. And that's why folks, love a show like this, is because they love hearing what different folks across Montana have to say and what you're thinking. And, we get to hear from the talking heads all day, every day, but it's your phone calls that really make the show. Let's go to Ron in Big Fork, listening to KJJR. Ron, thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to comment something that happened in the last few days. I went in the Army in 64, and I put a number of years in after that, even after my first enlistment was up. But you see the comment made by Jane Fonda about global warming is caused by men and we should all be put in jail? I wonder if she means the guys that died and fought in Vietnam, the first responders in New York City. Does she want all of these men put in jail? I mean, this woman is given nothing to this country. She's a vile individual, and she had to do this on Memorial Day. So I just wonder what you thought about that.
Yeah, I forgot about that story until I saw your phone call and it said one line about, hey, Ron wants to talk about Jane Fonda and white men. And I was like, oh, that's right. I forgot about that story. Yeah, totally crazy. Ron, thanks for calling in and thanks for your service. Yeah, John Jackson, I don't think you saw this story over the weekend, but Fox News had this on Sunday morning on Memorial Day weekend. Jane Fonda blamed men and racism for climate change. during a conversation at this year's Cannes, it's called Cannes, right? Cannes, yeah, the big film festival, yeah. You know, arguing that without the patriarchy, the crisis allegedly of epic proportions would cease to exist. She said on Saturday, "This is serious. We've got about 7-8 years to cut ourselves in half of what we use of fossil fuels. And unfortunately, the people that have the least responsibility for it are hit the hardest. Global South, people on islands, poor people of color. It is a tragedy that we have to absolutely stop. We have to arrest and jail those men. They're all men behind this." And so it's only men that are causing climate change, apparently. So, you know, women, you can keep driving your diesel pickups and you can keep ranching, but you can't let the husband do any ranch work anymore because men are the only ones that actually are responsible for climate change.
Quick question, Eric. Now, if I've seen the stats right, it's China and India that are the world's number one polluters. Am I right on that?
Well, that's if you consider carbon dioxide a pollutant, which is a debate in itself. But if we want to play the silly game and win the stupid prize, it's China that wins the big prize here.
China and India. And now, also correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, is there quite a lot of white men over there in China and over there in India? I don't think so. I think they're more of a minority over there.
Well, you know, that depends. If they start voting Republican, then they will have to be considered white. Kind of like the Hispanic voters in Florida and the Hispanic voters in Texas that started in droves of voting to secure our southern border and voted for lower taxes. And, you know, all of a sudden now, no, those, they're Hispanic, but we're going to consider them white now. Because once they start voting Republican, John, they're considered to be white.
Well, there's a reason that Rush Limbaugh dedicated 30 years of his career to going after this global warming, climate change nonsense. It's because he knew that, number one, that got the left so many pillars of their agenda in one shot, and he also knew that's the thing that will destroy us. It will turn us into a third world country. It will be responsible for global starvation and death. That's what these people like Jane Fonda, they want you to be back to driving covered wagons. I mean, these people are nuts.
Well, and ironically enough, that this whole movement against fossil fuels and economic modernization, the people that are going to be harmed the most are the people who die because of lack of access to electricity and clean water.
Yep.
The fact is that more lives have been saved because of fossil fuels and economic modernization. And third world countries are in desperate need of this economic modernization. But you know, Jane Fonda has been a traitor her whole life.
Yep.
What she did to our Vietnam veterans was absolutely despicable and disgusting. And that's why we all have heard the stories about how she would get kicked out of restaurants or bars in Montana if she dared show her face in there because of our great Vietnam veterans. It reminds me of the quote, for those of you who listened to our Memorial Day show yesterday, we had a Sydney, Montana native who served in Operation Iraqi Freedom, and he continues to serve as a firefighter today. But he shared a quote about Vietnam veterans that came from Joseph Galloway, the reporter who was there with Hal Moore. You know, the book, We Were Soldiers, Once and Young, the movie We Were Soldiers, played by Mel Gibson. And the quote that from Galloway that Travis Norby shared yesterday was this. They call those who fought in World War II the greatest generation. The Vietnam veterans may not be the greatest generation, but by God, they are the greatest of their generation. They did their duty and they never turned their backs on our country, even when their country turned its backs on them. If there's one word that captures them, it is honorable. That to me is such a compelling quote. Because when we think about the World War II generation, why did they call them the greatest generation? Because it wasn't just the men and women who stepped up to serve in the military. It was the whole country stepped up to serve. The whole country took part in the sacrifice. And tragically, when we look at the Vietnam generation, we had the Jane Fondas. We had the people spitting in their faces. We had the people harassing them when they got home and not welcoming them home. And so yes, the Vietnam veterans were the greatest of that Vietnam generation and the Jane Fondas of the world. Well, let me just stop there to say who they are of that generation.
And that brings us right into modern day right there. Who are we fighting in Vietnam, Aaron? We were fighting the communists, communist Russia and their aggression. That's who we were fighting. But the entire left wing of our country, Jane Fonda and all the politicians, spent 10 years undermining, sabotaging, trying to stop that war. Those same people right now want to tell you they want to fight the Russians in Ukraine. That's all you need to know about what they really
think. But they have no problem with the communist Chinese that are simulating American warships that they're attacking right now. Speaking of the whole Jane Fonda being at the Cannes Film Festival, or is it Cannes or Con? I don't know. It's a con if you ask me. How did she get there? Did she take a kayak? She obviously burned a lot of carbon dioxide to get there. I forgot. She's a woman, so her carbon dioxide does not count towards the climate change calculations here.
When's the last time the woman made a serious hit movie? I mean, what are we talking, 40 years ago?
I couldn't tell you. It was before I was alive, that's for sure. All right, let's go to Mark in the Paradise Valley. Mark, great to hear from you.
Yeah, hi. I just want to comment about the CO2 fiasco. Okay, so carbon dioxide is 0.0042% in the atmosphere right now. During the Jurassic era, through core samples, it was 0.06. Okay, and so there's your climate change right there. And I don't believe there was any internal combustion engines or any other fossil fuels that were going on that generated that climate change. The planet does it on its own, okay? And so every 26,000 years, the orbit of the planet around the sun changes, as does the angular orientation of the poles. Those all contribute to the amount of exposure to the sun, which is the biggest climate change variable out there.
You can get sunspots.
None of these people will consider any of that.
Sunspots,
right now,
solar
there
flares.
42 volcanoes erupting worldwide. None of that is ever being told. Okay? So all of these things need to be considered, and you always need to question authority.
That's right. Oh, well said. And on the whole climate change hustle, as Mark in Paradise Valley referred to it, Mark, thanks for the call. I mean, Glacier National Park. Remember they had the signs up? The glaciers are melting. The glaciers are melting. They've been melting for a long time now. That's why the entire state of Montana was once mostly a glacier, but is no longer a glacier because they've been melting. But they told us the glaciers were going to be gone by 2020, and then in 2020 they quietly took the signs down while everybody was shutting up and wearing their masks. Well, not everybody.
That's such a great call that Mark is dead on. That's a guy who really, really knows the numbers, and he's absolutely right. If you ever see or read the numbers, you know that's dead on. And I heard a guy say it one time perfectly. He said, the whole notion behind climate change is give the government money and they'll change the weather. Now, if you believe that, then all in, boys, all in. You know, if you think giving Joe Biden half your money is going to change the weather, then, you know, all in.
China's building a coal-fired power plant every single week, but they want to shut down Coal Strip, Montana. You know, they're nuts. Let's go. We got less than a minute before the break. Ken in Billings, great to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron. One of my first things is with Jane Fonda. She was called Hanoi Jane. Well, I'll tell you what, somebody should have against this country.
Well, we don't suggest violence against anybody, but I understand your anger and frustration, especially if you served in Vietnam or lost a friend there, yeah.
Yeah, I lost quite a few of my buddies from when I graduated school. But the other thing, too, is, you know, these LGBT, whatever the heck they want to call it, they want to run in the women's deal. They have all their parts and pieces of a man, right? Well, I think it's about time we took them, we made them into a woman and take them out behind the barn and
Well, we've been, just to be clear, we have been the ones not advocating for chopping body parts off of kids. That's what the legislative Democrats in Helena have been advocating for. So they're the ones that want to remove these healthy body parts off of kids. Good time.
broadcasting live across the great state of Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, phone lines are open for you. Anything and everything you want to talk about. Although, you know, I say anything and everything you want to talk about. Still within reason here, folks. Yeah, John, probably good we had a break there. Our producer, Travis, came in and had to joke around a little bit. He said, well, in case anybody was wondering if there is still anger and animosity towards Jane Fonda after all these years. Well, there you go. Yeah, there's still a lot of anger directed towards Hannah Jane, that's for sure.
Well, you could sit around with your friends at the bar and use what your mom used to say as your outside voice. But when you're on the radio, you have to use your inside voice.
And this is coming from John Jackson, who whenever he joins us on the show, it's the most unwoke hour of the week. And so Mr. Unwoke himself is saying, whoa, easy out there. But even though we're going to disagree with folks, heck, we even disagree with friends. You and I have, you know, not total disagreement on this whole debt ceiling deal that was announced over the weekend, but still disagree slightly on it. So anyway, let's jump into that one, because I'd be interested in what our friends, you know, from Glendive and Plentywood and Missoula and elsewhere across the state have to say about this. So, yeah, John, you and I earlier were talking about this debt ceiling deal, where Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy now says that they have a deal with President Biden. And, you know, a former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, is saying that, you know, this is just the first step towards getting this country back on track. But he says that this is a Republican win on the debt ceiling. But meanwhile, Freedom Caucus conservatives like Montana Congressman Matt Rosendale, Congressman Chip Roy out of Texas, are pushing back against this, basically saying that this is a disaster. That's the words that Congressman Matt Rosendale used over the weekend. But I think where you and I both seem to agree on this is, you know, I think former Speaker Newt Gingrich makes some really good points about, hey, for the first time in a long time, Republicans have actually gotten some concessions out of the Democrats when it comes to a debt ceiling hike negotiation. Because before, it's always been, all right, Republicans want to lower spending, Democrats want a blank check to increase the debt, the media backs the Democrats win, the Republicans concede, and round and round we go. Whereas this time, they've actually gotten some concessions. But I still think the bigger question, and I think this is, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, where you and I agree here, is why did they cave from supporting the initial deal that the House Republicans were united in this debt ceiling deal that they already passed through the full House 1 month ago? It lowered spending and avoided default on the debt. So why change the plan now? Why weaken the plan now? I think that's where you and I agree.
Yeah, and it was, like we said before, you know, this is not our first rodeo. We've seen this happen how many times over the last 20 years? And I said on your program, they're going to cave, and it's just going to be what handful of magic beans do they settle for? And here's, you know, I know people in an information war like we have now, you're going to see out there on Fox News and out there on social media, you're going to see these talking points from Newt Gingrich and these talking points from Kevin McCarthy and then these talking points over here from the Freedom Caucus. Gosh, what do I believe? What's the real deal? As I said before, all you have to know is watch the Democrats and Biden and the mainstream media. That's how you know. And they're happy about this. They're bragging about it. They're whipping votes on it. Now, do you think that that's because they lost anything in this deal? Oh, heck no.
Well, I also think it shows the strength of the GOP's bargaining position here. I mean, last week we were quoting polls from CNN where over 60% of the American people supported the GOP position, which was no, you have to lower spending and avoid a default on the debt. But the American people didn't support just an automatic knee-jerk hike on the debt ceiling. Here's part of what Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy had to say on Fox News Sunday. I'll just share a very brief version.
We finally were able to cut spending. We're the first Congress to vote for cutting spending year over year. So you cut that back. You fully fund the veterans. You fully fund defense. But you take that non-defense spending all the way back lower than 22 levels. Now you get work requirements for TANF and SNAP, where the Democrats said that was a red line. Now you're able to reform NEPA. How frustrating we are with, it's been 40 years since you could streamline it. To build a road in America takes you 7 years of review. We now limit that where it's focused, where you can only review it for 1 to 2 years.
So anyway, that's part of what Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy had to say. Freedom Caucus conservative Congressman Chip Roy out of Texas was on Fox News later over the weekend as well. Oh, actually, let me cue up another soundbite for you. That's a good one, too, but I want to go to this part in particular. Here we go.
We came together and were unified a month ago, and we passed something that was meaningful. $1.5 trillion debt ceiling increase for very substantive changes to the fiscal direction of this country. We are barreling towards unlimited debt in this country. We're just barreling towards an infinite amount of debt, and we've got to stop that. The American people didn't send me here to just do what the defense establishment, the spending appropriators all want to do in this town, which is spend money we don't have. And respectfully, all this does is bends a curve off of a pre-COVID or a post-COVID curve, right? Instead of pre-COVID levels, we are now going up the post-COVID curve, and we're flattening it out, basically freezing spending for 2 years for a $4 trillion debt increase.
All right. So well said there by Congressman Chip Roy as well. John, from a Montana perspective, I think the Montana legislature and the Montana governor went about this in the right way. Now, we have a balanced budget requirement in our Montana Constitution, so that helps, right? But they didn't increase spending year over year and use COVID money in order to do so. They used COVID money for one-time spending projects, infrastructure, etc. They used the surplus that came in thanks to the tax cuts to give rebates and property tax rebates, etc. Maybe not as much as you and I would have liked, but nonetheless, that's how they delivered it. Actual year-by-year spending is going to increase, I think, roughly 4%, but that's under inflation, which is a marker that you would typically use. Whereas what the Democrats want to do is bake in the massive COVID overspending into the annual budgeting cycle.
And I'm one of these guys, you know, full disclosure, I am a fiscal hawk in every way, because I know I was in the government for 30 years. What have we learned since 2016, since Trump to now, the last 7 years? That government, any power you give it will be abused. They are using the power of government against you. We have to, like the founders say, we have to make government as limited as possible, because it is a necessary evil. They called it an evil. How do we do that? We've got to take away its money. And when we've got the uniparty out here, Republicans and Democrats, all they agree on is continuing to spend our money. We're never going to make that happen. Government's just going to keep on growing, more and more powerful, more and more evil.
And that's why I want to know who caved, who buckled, because Speaker McCarthy, he's only got the votes that he's got. He's got to herd the cats here. So if he loses four or five moderates this way or four or five conservatives that way, well, eventually he's got to get something done. And so who are the handful of Republicans that caved from the plan that was approved about 1 month ago? Into the phone lines we go. We got a couple of callers who want to talk about the debt ceiling deal. But first, Mike in Bozeman wants to talk about Hanoi Jane Fonda. Mike, good to hear from you.
One of the things that needs to be emphasized here, you guys, is, you know, we talked about some of these subject matters from altitudes. And one of the more common comments is that, well, from the 30,000-foot level, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, we end up talking about Jane Fonda and the Marxist left from ground level. And we try to argue with them on the same level, same intellectual level as what their concepts are. Well, the thing of it is that their ideology is based on the 30,000-foot level. And when you argue from a 30,000-foot level, then that means you got to start reading some books. And I've emphasized in the past Dr. Paul Kinger and his two books that I that I have.
So with less than a minute to go before the break, what's the 30,000-foot perspective that needs to be emphasized right now, if you could summarize? Well,
for example, I've got these two books, Takedown, How the Communists to Progressives, How the Left Has Sabotaged Family and Marriage, and then his book, Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for a Century. 500-plus pages in this Dupes book, less than that in the Takedown. And I'm also reading the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers. I'm on Federalist number 69.
Yeah.
And there's 88 of them total.
So since we're just about to run to a break, and thanks for the call, Mike. Those are all great suggestions, it sounds like. I think the 30,000-foot level or the 60,000-foot China spy balloon level here is...
Broadcasting from the Grizzly Gold and Silver Studios, trusted by the Northwest, Montana owned. Online at grizzlygoldandsilver.com.
Montana is talking here. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right back into the phone lines here. We got Stan in Billings listening to KBUL. Stan, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Hey, Aaron, good to be on. Hey, real quick, I think the next presidential candidate, in being completely transparent, should send out a tax statement to every taxpayer in the country showing that they owe $248,000 and it's increasing. So every 6 months, we get a bill. And right now, in my household, four taxpayers, we owe, what, $992,000 to the federal government. So I think I think that might change some of the voting principles, if you will, if people see what they actually owe the government.
Yeah, good point. Kind of like how when you get your property tax bill in the mail from the county, and you're having your morning coffee, and you spit it out all over your coffee table because you're like, whoa, it went up again? What the heck? Yeah, imagine if people knew the true cost of what they were paying out. Yeah, good point. Thanks for the call, Stan. Great to hear from you. John, you and I were talking about this debt ceiling. Well, first, if you want to react to what Stan had to say there, feel free as well. But we were talking about this debt deal that was announced over the weekend, and frankly, if I were one of these Republican members of Congress, it's like, hey, do I appreciate the fact that Republicans have finally negotiated something out of this deal like they haven't been able to do in probably three decades? Yes. But I still haven't been convinced on why we can't support what we just supported 1 month ago and continue to stand firm. So the way I'd see it is, no, do not vote for this new deal. And stand firm and say, no, I'm going to vote for the plan that we just voted on and passed as a body united 1 month ago. And then okay, it might come eventually down to it where, okay, something's got to cross the finish line here. But I think they need to stand firm. And I appreciate the fact that what the Republicans have done now is they have shifted where the center is. The center now is this debt deal that was announced over the weekend. And the center is not on the left, which is, oh, nope, you just have to pass the, you know what I'm saying? So we have pushed the dialogue towards the right.
Well, and like we said before, these budget things are so intricate and so complex, and it's by design because they don't really want you to know what went on here. But if you want to know, go to my Twitter page and you'll see this guy named Russ Vought, V-O-U-G-H-T. He was Trump's OMB director, Office of Management and Budget. Okay, he was the director of it. He is doing a long tweet stream really getting down into the weeds on this and showing you what they're doing, what it means, what it actually will end up being. And once you read what he tells you on this, because he's read the entire bill and he's breaking it down a piece at a time, then you will get the true picture of what a handful of magic beans we got sold here.
All right. Let's get to another caller here. We've got Joe in Billings. Joe, thanks for the call.
Morning, Aaron. I've been listening to you guys this morning, and, it seems like you forget the Republicans barely have one house of of the three places that need to make a deal. Everyone keeps saying, or you keep saying, well, how great the Republicans did in Montana. Well, we have super majorities in Montana. I mean, we could do whatever we wanted. But Biden, what my fear was that Biden would accuse the Republicans of this financial disaster that would occur, and then when there's a disaster, would seize, you know, power and stuff that, because he's got to do it because it's a crisis, he'd blame the Republicans. We lose more freedom and they win. And I was terrified that's what was going to happen. I think the Republicans coming out and getting some win where they can not work on the budget in 8 months or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, I think that's why I think, yeah, I think that's why, you know, former Speaker Newt Gingrich lays out a very good case in his op-ed at FoxNews.com. If you hadn't seen that yet, Joe, where he makes the point that the contract with America Republicans did not leap to four consecutive balanced budgets, the only time in our lifetime. They calmly and methodically took a series of steps that moved the government back towards conservatism. And so he's making the argument that here, that what McCarthy has done with this debt deal that was announced over the weekend is one important first step in moving our country back in that direction. And then and then round two is going to be the budget negotiations moving forward as well. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
We have like an 8-vote majority in one house. If the American people wanted change, then they should have friggin' voted in the last election and gotten more Republicans elected.
Well, that's true, but we still do have one house, the most important house when it comes to spending. And so, you know, the Democrats would use their power to block everything with the one house they had. So why don't the Republicans use the same power? John Jackson, your thoughts, and Joe, thanks for the call.
That is an absolute bingo right there, Aaron. That's exactly what I was going to say. Look back to 2018 to 2020 when Nancy Pelosi had the house under Trump. Did she give him one stinking dime of anything he wanted? Heck no, because they don't play that game. They use power. The Democrats use power. Republicans think power is going to give them a case of the clap. I mean,
I'm thinking of In Living Color in the 1990s. You know, homie, don't play that. Smack. You know, got it. They need the house too, right?
Yep.
So, all right, great phone calls. All